It could be, for example, offshore structure, could be durability. Durability is the ability of the concrete to resist the effect of water or chemical actions. And if we are going to increase the durability, then the high durability achieved by using the inert aggregate. Yesterday you had a short discussion about the aggregate. What's the aggregate? Why the aggregate is important? The influence of the aggregate on compressive strength of the concrete. And then also we have to select the correct water-cement ratio. The aim of selecting correct water-cement ratio is reduce the void and control the porosity of the structures. And we know that water-cement ratio also influence on the compressive strength of the concrete. So if you have a dense concrete, if you have a concrete with lower voids and pores, then it means that the chemical action cannot go through the concrete easily, and it's favorable for us, and it's increased the durability of the concrete. So one of the important parameters is water-cement ratio. And the other parameters we should control is dense surface. If we have a dense surface, then penetration of the water and other chemical action is not easy to the concrete. And to reach all of this, we need to select the appropriate additive and admixture. So it's important to know that when we speak about the durability of the concrete, we have to be careful about the concrete mixture and additive and water cement ratio. What's the durable concrete? Durable concrete is one that performs satisfactory under anticipated exposure condition during the service life. We design the concrete based on the exposure condition, based on the environmental condition. If I'm going to have a concrete in a really bad situation near the seawater, or if I want to have it in a, for example, inner part of the structures, which is more safe, then the provision is different. But both of them could be durable. It's important to know that the durability is a function of the environmental condition, and the environmental condition directly influence on the quality of concrete we use. Generally, concrete suffer from more than one cause of deterioration. And the type of the deterioration, today we just we go through that and mention the type of the deterioration we have, but we cannot say that one concrete structure only suffer from corrosion or freeze thaw. So sometimes we have a combination of the problem in a concrete structure, and then we need to evaluate the concrete based on that combination, and the code will help us. It's important, each of these deterioration have an influence on the structures. It could be cracking, spalling, or loss of strength, ductility, and other problems. So the main factor influencing the durability of the concrete is permeability or impermeability. When the concrete is dense and it's not possible to, or it's difficult for ions to go through the concrete, then we can say that the concrete is durable. So it's important to make the concrete impermeable. So it's a main factor, and you can see in several books and papers, they focused on these parameters when they speak about the durability of the concrete and try to find the factor which influence on the permeability of the concrete. Because, for example, if you speak about the corrosion happens when the water or moisture go through the concrete, and also the iron, the chloride ion, go through the concrete, and then together make the corroded rebar. So always permeability play an important role in the durability of the concrete structures. So, for having the good and durable concrete, it's necessary for the construction to be able to resist the aggressive environment in long term, because usually aggressive ions need time to go through the concrete. It's not a very quick process. Then we have to make concrete to be strong along the time. It's not just a matter of 1 month, 2 months, or 1 year, or 2 year. We should think about the several years, and also the good durable concrete need to control during the time, and we have to control and check how much, for example, chloride we have in our concrete, and the chloride diffusion, and how much chloride go through the concrete, what's the chloride depth, and then there is a critical chloride content. If the chloride near the rebar reach that critical content, that we understand that it's time to think about the corrosion, and corrosion will start, and this concrete, we have to do something for controlling this concrete. So usually time is an important factor when we speak about the durability. And chloride induced reinforcement corrosion, chemical attack from the seawater, frost deterioration, and also some other, for example, sulfate and several parameters could influence on the concrete and reduce the durability of the concrete and properties of the concrete. All these forms of deformation, which we will go through that later, are reduced when lowering the water binder or water cement ratio. And as I mentioned, that using the lower water cement ratio, but not very low, we should be careful about the value of the water cement ratio. Yesterday we had a discussion, short discussion about that. Then we can reduce the permeability of the concrete. So there is a direct relation between the using the low water cement ratio and having the low permeable concrete. In addition, when we reduce the water cement ratio, or water binder ratio, then there is a direct influence on the strength of the concrete. With low water cement ratio, then we have a high strength of the concrete. So it directly influences on the strength. So it's a win-win situation. When we reduce that, we could have a low permeable concrete and high strength concrete. But I should mention that we cannot just reduce the water cement ratio without controlling any parameters, because as you remember yesterday, we said that water cement ratio is a very important factor, and if you reduce it a lot, then we will have a too much unhydrated cement. And if we increase the water cement ratio, we have a lots of pores in our structures. So we should find the best water cement ratio. And the other factor influence on the durability of the concrete is curing, good curing condition. It's important after making the concrete, then we start to curing the concrete and take care of the concrete to reduce the void and have a less permeable concrete. So curing also is a very, very important factor to have a durable concrete. And the risk of the reinforcement corrosion also reduced by increasing the thickness of the cover. One of the factors which today we will go through that is increasing the cover thickness. When we increase the cover thickness directly influences on the time and postpone the time of penetrating the ions to the concrete. So in somehow we could have a less permeable concrete during the time when we have a higher and larger thickness of the concrete cover. So damage of concrete due to the lack of durability. The first things when we speak about the damaged concrete is crack. For sure, when we have a deterioration in the concrete structures, crack developed in the concrete. It could be fine crack or it could be very wide cracks. So there is a several reason for each crack, and then it could be crack due to the ASR problem or crack due to the chloride penetration or spalling or whatever. And the other parameters and the other damage of the structure is spalling of the cover. The cover spalled off, and it could be due to the freeze and thaw and due to the other type of the deterioration. Next week we will go through the each deterioration mechanism and effect of each mechanism on the concrete. And then by collecting all of information, we could have a good view of the concrete and damage of the concrete and durability of the concrete. And the other effect is corrosion in the rebar. And when the rebar is corroded, then we have a crack in the concrete, and also it could reduce the properties of the rebar and concrete. So the ductility, lack of ductility, also could influence in type of failure, because when your rebar is corroded and the rebar is not enough ductile, and after applying the load, suddenly the rebar is disrupted and couldn't go through the yielding process. So it's reduced the ductility of the rebar. And when the ductility of the rebar is reduced, it's influence on type of failure. Usually, we would like the concrete structure behavior in the flexural behavior. First, rebar start to yielding, and after that, the crack increase, and then failing the concrete happens, because it's a kind of warn for people who lives in the structure. But if we have a sudden failure or brittle failure, it's not favorable for us, because the rebar is quickly disrupted without going through the yielding and suffer the deflection, and suddenly the concrete have a brittle failure. So it's not favorable for us. And less durable concrete could also change the failure of the concrete. So it's important to control the ductility and failure type of the concrete. And also deposits of salt can take place, and it's called efflorescences. So we will speak about this problem later, maybe next week. And complete structure failure can occur. And as I mentioned, that the ductility influence on the failure, and it could change even the failure type. And it's very important parameters, especially when you are going to predict the residual capacity of the structure. Assume that you have a column or you have a bridge, and you are going to check the capacity of the structures. And you try to model the structure in the software, and then try to consider the effect of the damage in the simulated model. And then you can see after analysis that in the location of the damage, for example, when the ductility of the rebar is reduced or cross-section of the rebar due to the corrosion is reduced, then you have a big problem on that part. So it's very, very important to, and very difficult. It's not easy at all, because always you have a several problem in the structures. And you cannot just say that, okay, I reduce the ductility of the rebar and it's considered the effect of the corrosion. The corrosion, for example, influence on the bond slip between the rebar, influence on the compressive strength of the concrete due to the several crack we have. And it's reduced the cross-section and also change the yield strength and ultimate strength of the rebar. So you can see, if you don't have a durable concrete or durable concrete, then predicting the behavior of the structure would be very difficult. So it's more wise to, before starting to make the structure, think about the durability and go through the provisions to have a completely durable concrete. And in different age, you can check and control and also use some repair to control and increase the durability of the structures. So one of the influence of the deterioration is crack. Let's have a short discussion about the crack and type of the crack in the structures. We have two different type of the crack. Here I'm going to speak about these two. One of them is the thermal crack and the other is a external loading crack. Thermal crack could be internal and external. And external loading crack is due to the heavy truck, for example, on the bridge, and it's due to the loads, and it's tangible. You could understand if you have a heavy load in the structure, then we will have some crack. But the one thing that I'm interesting to speak about is thermal crack. When you made the concrete, for example, big wall or big concrete structures, you know that the concrete, make fresh concrete, produce a lot of heat because the hydration process produces a lot of heat. And when we have a concrete in the, if I go to the next slide, I can show you here. When we make the concrete element, in the middle of the concrete, we have a high temperature, higher temperature. But in the surface, the temperature is less because it's faced to the environment with different temperature. So this difference between the temperature leads to having the internal restraint. It's a kind of restraint for the structure, and it's produced the crack in the structures. And we name it thermal crack, internal thermal crack. Why this type of crack is important for us? Because crack could allow the different ions and different chemical ions to easily go through the concrete and reach the rebar. So if we have even a small crack and fine crack in our structures, it means that we have a less durable concrete. And it's important when we make the concrete structure, this type of the crack, because the hydration process is for early age concrete for first mounts, and then we have to control, we have to completely control the temperature outside and inside of the concrete to reduce the difference between temperature, to reduce the crack. And by reducing the crack, we increase the durability of the concrete and reduce the potential of deterioration of the concrete. So this is one of the crack we should be careful about that when we speak about the durability. It's an internal crack. And the other type of the crack is external crack. Assume that you have an old concrete, it could be a foundation, and you made it and it's finished. And then you are going to make another concrete on that. And this two different concrete, this concrete play as a restraint for the new concrete and try to attach and keep the new structure, and this makes some forces on that, make it different of the even different in the temperature, because this is a cold concrete and this is a warm concrete, fresh concrete. And this difference due to the external concrete or external restraint make in some crack in the structures. I know in the NTNU there are some method and some software to and some even guideline to control the size of the crack, and especially when you are going to make this type of the wall or here, you can see we already have this kind of restraint here. And then we add this wall to the, for example, a street or whatever. Then we have to do some control on that to avoid this type of the crack in the wall. If I'm going to speak about the durability of this structure, for sure the first things we can see without any test is that we have a lots of crack here. Some of them are very wide crack. And we cannot say that this concrete is durable concrete, and then, for example, by changing the cover or whatever, we could solve the problem of the durability. So there is a guideline, and based on that guideline, if you follow the guideline, then you can control and reduce the lot, the crack. And even it's possible, if you have an existing structure like this, it's possible to understand the, which zone of the concrete structure is need to be repaired by simulation and control the, and do some test on that. So, but it's, as I said, it's more wise to, before making the structure, think about the durability provision and try to control all provisions. Okay. I think you can have a 30-second break, and then I can continue. Is it concrete?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay, let's continue with the crack. Another type of the crack we have is could be crack due to the loads. And for example, one of them is tension crack. The crack, when we apply the load on the structure, for example, assume that we have a beam, and in the structure we apply the load. Some part of the beam is in compression and the other part is in tension. So in the tensile zone, then we could say that we have a crack, and the width of the crack is function of the and the magnitude of the bending moment. So always when we speak about the crack, we should also be careful about the applied load. It's not only function of the difference between the temperature or just external chemical attack. It could be also due to the loading. So controlling the crack is one important parameter in controlling the durability of the structures. So let's have a small discussion about the corrosion. Corrosion, assume that this is a concrete, this is a column in the near the seawater, and half of the column is submerged in the underwater, and there is a tidal zone here. Water sometimes increase in this level and sometimes go down at this level. And also we have a concrete in the atmosphere which is not in contact with the water. So we can divide the concrete in three parts. So the most dangerous part for the concrete is the tidal zone. What's the reason for this? Do you have any idea about why, for example, concrete under the water is more safer than this area?
Condition is stable, more stable.
Yeah. here is condition more stable. And then here we have a dry and wet situation. It's very dangerous for the concrete because the water goes through the concrete here and then the water comes down and then it starts to dry and the salt remain in the structure and water come out. So it's repeated every day. And there we have lots of chloride in the concrete in this zoom. And also sometimes the water remove the cover of the concrete and reduce the cover thickness. And then this area is very dangerous for the corrosion. And if you see sometimes in a bridge or column on the bridge, they add some cover, some steel cover over the water. And the main reason to control the cover spalling due to the tidal zone or due to the splashing the water. So it's important to know that this area is much dangerous or much potent. There's lots of potential of danger in this area, damage in this area. And here we have a submerged concrete and the concrete is full of water. And then when the there is no void for chloride to remain here and to react. Sometimes concrete under the water completely keep without corrosion. It's very important to know that. But sometimes the corrosion happen as well. But it's important to see that this area, the tidal zone, is more dangerous. And here, there's a potential of chloride here. And here, when the concrete is in contact with the atmosphere, we can say that the potential of the carbonation is higher than this zone, because most of the time the carbonate come from the air, and then in this area we will have a possibly potential of the carbonation. So when we speak about the corrosion, the chloride corrosion is much more important than the carbonation. At least in majority of the corrosion we suffer, we have the chloride corrosion. So chloride penetrate to the concrete and then making the concrete and reach the embedded steel. And in embedded steel, we have a passive film. When we don't have a chloride, there is a passive film on the steel. And when the chloride reach the rebar or reinforcement, it's remove this passive film by some chemical reaction, which I will describe you next week how remove this passive layer. And then chloride start to attach to the rebar and remain on the rebar. And in some place, we have a concentration of the chloride. For example, we have lots of chloride here and less chloride here. At location that we have a high chloride, then it's a start to reduce the cross-section. We name it localized corrosion, which reduce the cross-section localizedly, or the other name is pitting corrosion. And also we have a different type of the corrosion. It's general or uniform corrosion, which usually reduce whole cross-section of the rebar. Uniform corrosion usually happen when we have a carbonation. And we have a corrosion due to the carbonate attack. But when we speak about the chloride, because concentrating the different place, the chloride content here, by here and here is different, then we have a pitting corrosion and localized corrosion. Why localized corrosion is important for us? And why we should be careful about the localized corrosion? Assume that you have a rebar. And the rebar, for example, the cross-section of the rebar is 20 millimeters. And if you have a chloride concentration and reduce the cross-section, for example, up to 40 or 50%, It means that in one small point like this, here, you reduce the cross section from 20 millimeters to 10 millimeters. And this reduction of the cross section means that, for example, when it's the beam and you apply the load, it means that the location of the weakest part of the structure is location of the pit. Usually, when you have a beam with rebar, then after applying the load, the deflection is like this. And you have some crack, bending crack here. And the rebar here will be yelled. The maximum tension is in this zone. But, and then from here we have a failure, bending failure of the concrete. But if, for example, you have a chloride attack in this area, then what's happened? The problem is, if I have a rebar here, then I have some pit here, reduce of the cross section. And then when I apply the loads, it try to behave like this. But the fail and here start to be yield. But the problem is, before yielding in this area, because the cross section in this zone is reduced, then I have a failure and disrupt of the cross section in this area. And suddenly the rebar is disrupted, and the bond slip between the rebar and concrete also remove. And then I have a problem in this area before having the bending, maximum bending capacity. And it's reduced the capacity of the structure. So location of the pit incursion in the structure is very important and could influence a lot in the capacity of the structures. For example, if you want to draw the moment diagram and find the maximum moment capacity of this structure without corrosion, this structure with corrosion, there is a big difference between these two. So when we speak about the durability of the concrete, and when we speak about the predicting the residual capacity of the structure, you can see even for one of the problems, for example, corrosion, the prediction is not easy at all. Assume that we have in this case, we just focus on the cross-section reduction. But when we have a chloride on the structure, we should have some crack here as well. We should consider in our calculation. And also, we do not have a completely embedded rebar in the concrete because the layer between the rebar and concrete is removed and the concrete slips easily. And it's completely changed the concept of the design of the structure. So you can see even a small change in a small attack in the concrete structure make a several and serious problem in the structure. Just consider that it's just one small element in the structure with several problems. Let's have a big bridge, and in a different place we have a different kind of the problem. Yesterday I show you that we have an inclination of the column, we have a different type of the crack, we have a corrosion, sulfate attack, freeze-thaw, spalling. So when you collect all of them as one package, then you understand you need to spend lots of time and money to predict the residual capacity of the structure. And this is the reason always we have to think about the durability before execution of the structure, before starting to make of the structure. So here I'm going to show you small shape of the corrosion. Colorized ion reach the surface of the rebar when we have oxygen. And you can see it's reduced the cross section. And in some parts increased and produced some product which leads to cracking the concrete, because increasing the volume, and then you can see this type of the crack in the structures and the spalling of the color. So, you can have a short break and then we continue after that. Okay. Here in this graph, we can see the effect of the concrete cover on probability of the corrosion. Here we have a 70 millimeter cover, 90 millimeter, and 120 millimeter cover. It's completely clear that increasing the cover reduces the probability of the corrosion attack a lot, and it's influenced a lot on that. If you have a 120 millimeter cover, then after 120 years, the probability is less than 10%. But if we have a 70 millimeter, you can see it's around 70%. So this graph shows us the importance of cover to control the, for example, corrosion in this case. So what we need to learn is, I as an engineer want to know in different environmental conditions, how much should be the cover depth? How should find this? So because of that, we need to have some guideline, some code. So if we go through the codes and standards, we have a classification of exposure. It means that we divided the exposure clause in different level for each type of the deterioration. And this is this exposure clause is given in EN206 part 1, and also it's in the Eurocode 2. So let's see what's the exposure class and how many exposure class we have. We have 8 group of exposure classes. The group 1 is X0, no risk of the corrosion, and this is only the group 1 is only one classes. There is no level of the classes. And group 2 is the corrosion induced by carbonation. We have 4 different classes for that, depend on the level of the carbonation and severity of the carbonation attack. We have a 4 different level, which I will show you, and we will see the definition of that. And also we have group XD, which corrosion which is not from seawater, and then it's the 3 class. Group XS is corrosion induced by chloride from the seawater. And we have a group XF, freeze thaw attack, 4 classes. Group XA, chemical attack like sulfate and others. And group XA4, chemical action from manure. And also group XSA. So based on this group, we have a definition for each of them, definition of the level. In the next slide, we are going to be familiar with, for example, if I have a building near the seawater, which there is a potential of the corrosion, how can I divide it? In which level of the XD or XS is that? So let's start with group 1. In group 1, no risk of the corrosion or attack. If the concrete doesn't have any reinforcement, then all exposure classes except there is a freeze thaw or abrasion or chemical attack are in the group X0. Or if we have a reinforcement in the rebar, we should consider as X0 when the environment is completely dry. When we don't have a moisture, then we don't have any corrosion attack. For example, concrete inside the building with very low air humidity. So if we have this type of the concrete, for example, we can say that this is in group X0. So in the first column, we can see the classification of the exposure. And in the second column, we have a description of that. And in the third column, we have some example of that to help us to find our case easier. So this is for group one. For group two, this is for carbonation. And carbonation, you can see, divided to four different levels, XE1, 2, 3, and 4. Group 4 is more severe, and group 1 is less severe. So you can see it's a function of the humidity. It's a dry and or permanently wet, because if it's dry or it's permanently wet, then the carbonation cannot go through the concrete easily. And then wet, very dry, and moderate humidity, and cyclic wet and dry, which is in dangerous, more dangerous case for us. And you can see the example here. Concrete inside the building with low air humidity, concrete surface subject long-term water contact, concrete inside building with moderate and high humidity, and concrete surface subject to water contact. So if you have a special case, then you can check your case based on some test and some inspection, and then you understand, okay, this case is related to XC2 or XC3. The other case is corrosion induced by chloride other than from seawater. Again, it's a function of the humidity. We have a three level, moderate, wet, moderate humidity, wet, and cyclic. And there is an example here. In this case, you can see a different type of the example. And if you have a, so XD is for chloride from other than from seawater. And XS is for chloride from seawater. So again, it's divided to three classes, S1, S2, and S3, exposed to the airborne salt, but not in direct contact with seawater, permanently submerged, and tidal and splash and spray zone. You can see that when it's permanently submerged, it's one level down from the tidal zone, because we understand that the tidal zone is a much dangerous area for chloride attacking the seawater. And then we have a classification for freeze thaw. It's a four class: moderate water saturation, moderate water saturation with de-icing agent, here is a without de-icing agent, and high water saturation without de-icing, high water saturation with de-icing agent. So if you are gonna select the level, then sometimes you need to do some in situ test and understand amount of the ions or amount of the, for example, chloride or whatever in our case, and then based on that select the classification level. And chemical attack. Again, chemical attack is divided to three different levels, A1, A2, and A3. You can read the detail. And also, we have a chemical attack from the agricultural fertilizers. And group 8 is a special aggressive environment. So, the summary is we have 8 groups of deterioration. And for each group, we divide it in different level. And you as an engineer, if you are going to control the structure, then you should find the appropriate group for your structures. Maybe in your structures, you have more than one level. For example, XA2 and XS2 and XD3. So you should find the related exposure class. And based on that, we will find the durability class. What is the durability class? Durability class, meaning a class for different concrete mixture design, which are able to withstand the relevant exposure. So for each exposure we have, we should find the concrete with a specific quality. And this specific quality defined as a durability class. So if we find each exposure class, then we should find a related durability class for or concrete. Durability class are found in National Annex NSEN 206 part 1. Six durability class are defined. So we had 8 exposure class and then we have 6 durability class. And this is specifying the requirement to concrete mixture design and material selection, especially the type of the cement. And then requirements are given for mass ratio, air content, minimum mass of binder, and type of the cement. So when we speak about the durability class, the difference between the durability class is playing with these parameters. For each durability class, we have a different mass ratio, air content, and other properties. And the class, the durability class, are denoted by M or MF and a number, for example, M90, M60. The number is 100 times of the corresponding number of the mass ratio. I will show you what is the mass ratio. And the F means that the concrete shall be frost resistant. And the air entrainment is necessary. The lowest quality is denoted M90 and the best is MF40. So it's between the 40 and 90, the durability class. So here you can see 6 different durability class: M90, 60, 45, MF45, M40, and MF40. And here is the exposure class. For example, if you understand that your structure is in the exposure class X0, no risk of corrosion, then you are allowed to use the lowest durability class until highest durability class. You can select which one. But when, for example, you are in XC1, the level 1 of the carbonation, or others, then you cannot select M90. Durability class M90. You should at least select M60 or better quality. And here you can see for other type of the durability class. So it makes very simple for us. Assume that you have a case, you have a building, or you have a structure, then you should find and you should be careful to find the appropriate exposure class. And by exposure class, for example, I have a risk of corrosion, I have a risk of carbonation, I have a sulfate. And if you find that, then you, for example, you find that for your case, for example, the minimum should be M45. And then based on that, start to design your concrete, mixture of the concrete. And I will tell you what's the difference between the M90, M60, M45 in the properties. So the other point is, if an environment is characterized by more than one exposure class, as I mentioned to you, the exposure classes resulting in the strictest requirement to the durability shall be used for a specification of the durability. So if you have a case with different exposure class, you should find the much critical one and consider that. You should be conservative. This sentence means that if you have a several durability class, then you have to be conservative and select the specification for the durability class for much more restricted case. For example, we have a case here. In this case, an open garage is exposed to outside air, chloride transport by the car, and frost. The relevant exposure class in this situation are XC4 carbonation, XD corrosion, and XF freeze top, and level 4, 3, and 4. Each of these exposure classes result in the following durability class respectively, M60, M40, and MF45. The strictest combination of this durability class is MF40. And then you have to select the strictest combination of all of the exposure class. So this is a point you should be have in your mind. So some definition before showing you the difference between the durability class, we should know some, be familiar with some definition. The first one is mass ratio. Mass ratio is the ratio of W to cement plus the sum of the pozzolan material. It could be different type of the pozzolan, silica fume or others. But we have a factor K, effective factor. We do not directly add the mass weight of the pozzolan to the cement. We times is to the K and then find the mass ratio. And also we have effective binder content, which here you can see this part is the effective binder content. And we have a K factor, efficiency factor. K factor is different for each pozzolan. For example, if we have a silica fume, K factor is 2 or 1, depend on the type of the concrete. And then if, for example, we have a fly ash, the K factor is 0.2, 0.4, depend on the strength class. And if we have a slag, the K factor is 0.6. So for each pozzolan, the efficiency factor is different. So we should be careful about this. And there is another point here. The maximum amount of added silica fume to be taken into account for the calculation of the mass ratio. So the maximum effect, the maximum amount should be considered. I will show you in an example what does it mean and what does this formula means. Added silica fume plus silica fume in the cement divided by cement should be less than 0.11 by mass. This is a provision we have from the code. This is for silica fume. And for fly ash, we can see that, as I said, that the K factor, the efficiency factor is 0.2 and 0.4, depend on the strength class. And the maximum of added fly ash to be taken into account in our calculation. And added fly ash plus fly ash in the cement divided by cement should be less than 0.33 by mass. So this is a maximum mass we can use. And we should use this in our calculation. For example, if I have the added fly ash plus fly ash in the cement divided by cement, it should be less than 0.33. And then we can say that the fly ash maximum should be then cement times 0.33. This is the maximum value of the fly ash I have. If, for example, I calculate that the maximum value is equal to, for example, 100, and if I have 200, I should use 100 in our calculation. I will show you in the example. And then we have also a slag. For a slag, the efficiency factor is 0.6, and the maximum amount is 0.8 by mass. So let's have an example. And by this example, you will understand what does it mean. Calculate mass ratio and efficiency, effective binder content for a concrete with 370 kilogram cement type 2 and 30% fly ash in the cement, 175 liter of water, and adding 15% fly ash by mass of the cement per square meters. So the question is find mass ratio and effective binder content. So if I want to solve this, the solution is like this. fly ash in the cement, in the example, you can see that fly ash in the cement is 30% of the cement mass. It's mentioned here. So it's 111 kilogram. Added fly ash is 15% by mass per square meters. So it's 55. And the total mass of fly ash is 166.5 kilogram. So we have to calculate the highest allowable mass of fly ash in our calculation. And we know that if we come back to the formula, here you can see that the maximum amount is 33%. Added fly ash plus fly ash in the cement is 30% by mass. So here you can see that battery is low. Here you can see that the added fly ash, the highest allowable mass is 122. And fly ash in the cement is 111. So we should use the this distance, this added fly ash to that. So we add 11.1 kilogram fly ash to the batching plant can be used when calculating mass ratio and effective binder content. So the mass ratio, we could calculate the mass ratio water divided by cement K fly ash. Water is here from the example, cement is here, and the K factor is 0.2 we had already, and this difference 11 should be considered in our calculation. And effective binder content also could calculate it like this. So why we should calculate this? The way of the calculating is very easy, but the question is why we need this information and how we can use this information. So far, let's have a review. So far, we understand that we have an exposure class. It's a function of the deterioration process and level of that. And also we have a durability class for each exposure class. And in durability class, we understand that we could have, for example, M90, M60, and different type of the concrete. And we understand that the difference between the M90 and M60 and M40 is the ratio of, for example, the mass ratio and other properties. So we need to know the mass ratio for our case. We should be able to calculate the mass ratio and effective binder content. And if we go through this slide, you can see this is a definition of each durability class. For example, if I have an M90, it means that the maximum mass ratio should be 0.9. M60, the maximum mass ratio should be 0.6. So if you be able to calculate the mass ratio, then you can say that, okay, the concrete is in durability class M90 or M60, and then you can find the corresponding exposure class. And also minimum effective binder, you should also control this for each durability class. So again, as a summary, and a review of the today presentation, we understand that we have a different type of the deterioration process. And for each deterioration process, codes divided for in eight group of the exposure. And for each group, we have a different level depending on the amount of the chemical attack. And then for each level, we have a durability class. We have totally six durability class, M90 to M40. And for each one, we have a limitation of the mass ratio, effective binder content, and air content. So we should be able to calculate the mass ratio and effective binder content. And we learned that how we should calculate the mass ratio and other effective binder content for silica fume, for fly ash, and for slag. And then by calculating the, for example, mass ratio, I can check that the mass ratio is in which level of durability class. And then I can find that this concrete, which I made, is in durability class, for example, M45 or M60. And then I can say that this concrete, which this durability class could be used in the exposure class, in different exposure class, which exposure class from the table here we have. From this table. If you find the durability class, then you can say that in which exposure class you can use that concrete. So this is very important. You be able to calculate the durability class. So far, any question? Is it clear? Yeah. And the other parameters we should speak about that is concrete cover. If you remember, I show you in the beginning of the class, I show you a graph that show us the concrete cover could influence on the probability of failure due to the corrosion. If we have a 120 concrete cover based on the graph, we have less than 10% probability of failure. And if we reduce the concrete cover, then the probability of corrosion will increase. So we should be able, and we should have some regulation for concrete cover. How we could find the concrete cover? So there is a suggestion in the EN 1992 that the concrete cover never should be less than 10 millimeters. So it's important to at least 10 millimeters cover we should have, but it's not enough in the severe situation. So when we go through the table suggested by EN 180, we can see that for each exposure class, you can see in the first column here, we have a minimum concrete cover, minimum suggested concrete cover. For example, for class X0, which the durability requirement is M90, the minimum cover should be the minimum cover suggested is 10 millimeter at least. And for other durability class, it's mentioned how much should be the minimum cover, 15 millimeters, 25 millimeters, and maximum 50 millimeters for XS3. And also we have two different aspects. If the aim is 50 years design service life or 100 years design service life, how many years you are gonna use this with the specific probability of failure. It's based on the design. It could be 50 or 60. And also, there is a point that if we use the pre-stressing rebar in or steel in our concrete, then we should add. There's another table. On that table, this value is repeated, but add 10 millimeters. For example, if you have a pre-stress concrete in the XC2, then we should have a 35 and 45 millimeter cover for 50 and 100 years design service life. So you understand that you as an engineer should be able to define the exposure class. And if you could find the exposure class, then you can easily find the minimum requirement for cover, and also you can also find the which type of the concrete, which type of the durability class you should select related to that exposure class. Should it be M45, M40, or M90? And how much should be the cover? This is two important parameters, because if you have a less cover, and then you have a high quality, high durability class, then it's not enough. The only focusing on the durability class is not enough for having the safe structures. You should have also enough cover depth. So combination of these two could help you to have a proper concrete in different exposure class. Clear? I hope so. Yeah. Any question? It's not difficult, but you can easily control and find the but the point is, finding the exposure class always is not easy, because you solve the definition for each exposure class, and sometimes it's a little difficult to distinguish which exposure class you are. And then you probably need some tests, you need some data, some information about the structure. And maybe in one structure, in the different location, you have a different exposure class. And then you as an engineer should be careful which cover you will suggest. And it's not possible, for example, you say that in this part the cover should be 50 millimeter, and then at that part it should be 10 millimeters. It also should be the practical. So it's not as easy as we can see here in the practice. So you should have some engineering feeling and engineering idea when you go through the practice. So yes, I'm gonna stop it here, and next session I will start to distinguish different deterioration mechanisms. We have three different levels: physical, chemical, and also corrosion. And then we will go through the each deterioration mechanism and speak about all of them a little in detail. How is the process? And much more important, how is the what is the effect of each deterioration mechanism? If we have, for example, ASR, what's happening in this structure, and how we could distinguish this concrete as an ASR problem? I know you're familiar with some of the tests, experimental tests and in situ tests. You already learned about that. I'm not gonna go through the test, but I want to speak about the effect of that and what's the different type of the crack for ASR and, for example, for corrosion, how is the shape of the crack? Because it's help you by seeing the structure, understand, at least by inspection, understand the type of the problem. So next week we start with the little speak about the durability and then continue with deterioration process, and after that I also want to speak about the assessment, a strategy for the assessment. Yesterday I speak about the health monitoring, and in the next session I'm going to show you the how we can use the software to assess the structure. When we understand that we have a problem, how we should use the software and which software, which method we can use to predict the residual capacity of the structure. I selected to speak about this because I think it would be very important and interesting for you in future, because you are in the point that you can make a decision about your future, in which direction continue. So maybe speaking about this make a better viewpoint of this direction, and maybe some of you be interested in this direction. So it's important, and it's a good opportunity for you to see what's the behind of this theoretical, and at the end what will happen for you and what should you do in the future. So it's help you to make a decision easier for your future engineering life. Any question? Yep. Hein Finn Dyke. Yeah.